So the next thing that we used in that ceremony, in that same vein of recollecting the story of the Buddha, was to do a reading from the middle-length discourses, the discourse on the noble search, and that's in the in the voice of the Buddha himself. I think it's really practical, his reflections because before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, I too, being myself subject to birth, sought what was also subject to birth, and the same with aging, sickness, death, defilement. So that reflects, before, you know, here I am, subject to birth, caught in the realm of samsara, and that's what I kept looking for. That's where I tried to find my happiness, that's where I tried to find my security, that's where I tried to find my sense of a place. And no wonder I was always dissatisfied. That sense of understanding the danger of what is subject to birth, I'll seek for what is unborn, what's beyond birth, that constant cycle of coming into being and passing away, so a whole cycle of attachment and dissatisfaction, finding what is free from all that, and that sense of I'll seek the unaging, unailing, deathless, sorrowless, undefiled, supreme security from bondage, nibbana. So that sense of as a noble aspiration, that seeking freedom, and we tend to, and especially in America, I mean that sense of the value of freedom is really held up, but then it sort of ends up where you say, well, what's it freedom from, or what's it freedom of? You say, well, say freedom of sort of Second Amendment. It's true. our freedom from freedom from not having any government oversight. Yes, not having government getting in our way, having all these deal with have to taxes and whatnot. So, and then you end up with a healthcare system like America. So you say, well, the freedom. And so, what does it mean? What are we looking for? How do we actualize it? And the Buddha sort of said, well, freedom from what is aging and changing and ailing and disappointing us, and tending to create a sense of sorrow in the human condition. So that's to me, it's a very beautiful aspiration and recollection. And then the Buddha relating, later, while still young, a black-haired young man, endowed with the blessing of youth, in the prime of life, though my mother and father wished otherwise and wept with tearful faces, I shaved off my hair and beard, put on the yellow robe, went forth from the home life into homelessness. And again, that's sort of when he's relating himself, it's contradictory to the traditional story that's most well known of the Buddha sneaking off at night and his parents never ever knowing about it and having to find out later. There was probably some tension back and forth before he left to seek the homeless life, that leaving, especially for, I think even in the Buddha's time, even though there is a premium put on religious seeking, I think in Indian culture, it's more, but after you've fulfilled your duties, and, it's okay to do it once you've, married, looked after your children, had fulfilled all the different obligations of a household life, then when you're about 60 or 70, then you go off into the wilderness to lead a spiritual life. So that the Buddha is still young and is leaving the advantages, especially in his case, of growing up as in the warrior noble caste, a prince who would be taking over his father's kingdom, even though it was, say, like a small principality. Still, it was something that was endowed with a lot of comfort and privilege, so that his father not at all happy. But the Buddha having that aspiration, and then he goes and seeks these different teachers and practices with them, and he actually gains understanding and accomplishment in what they're teaching, but he finds that it's not satisfying to him. And then still in search, because of what is wholesome, seeking the supreme state of sublime peace, I wandered by stages through the Magadhan country until eventually I arrived at Uruvela at Seinanigamma. There I saw an agreeable piece of ground, a delightful grove with a clear flowing river with pleasant smooth banks, and nearby a village for alms. And I considered, this is an agreeable piece of ground. This is a delightful grove with a clear flowing river with pleasant smooth banks, and nearby for a village for alms resort. This will serve for the striving of a clansman intent on striving. And I sat down there thinking, this will serve for striving. So he's making that commitment. And something, I think one of the things that's helpful, and I think I brought it up in the Dhamma talk last night, where it's okay to experience pleasant things as a religious seeker, as a spiritual practitioner. The Buddha didn't go to polluted, smoky, garbage pit filled with people crowded around him. He went to a quiet, pleasant spot. That sense of pleasant and pleasing is one actually needs that as a balance for that sense contact, which can oftentimes be unpleasant. One doesn't have to subject oneself to what is unpleasant just because there's some inherent virtue in it. In the same way that just because you seek out the pleasant all the time doesn't mean it's going to make you peaceful or happy. There is a certain inherent quality in terms of pleasant can be soothing for one. Again, you got to pay attention to the balance, but that sense of finding something that is soothing on the senses, because the senses are experiencing contact with the world around, and it's going to react to that. So that many of the, say, great forest masters lived in quiet, natural settings. It's from the time of the Buddha up to the time of the present. And Bhagiri is, this is a delightful grove. And it's a really pleasant spot that helps us to settle. So the physical environment is supportive to that aspiration for peace. But then, having, say, found a supportive external environment, one has to pay attention to the striving aspect of it. It isn't sort of he found an agreeable piece of ground, delightful grove with clear flowing river with pleasant smooth banks, and nearby a village for alms or resort. And then this will serve for my opportunity of sleeping and eating a lot. It's not works. This will serve for striving. It's a good support for putting forth effort in spiritual practice. And a recollection of the Buddha. And it's interesting, in this discourse, the Buddha doesn't actually talk much of the internal aspect. There are many different discourses that reference the Buddha's aspiration, his awakening, his practice, and to get a whole picture, sometimes you have to pull from different sources in order to get a more complete picture. Like there's, I think one of the, say like the Udana is one. The first, second, third discourses of the Udana, which are the inspired utterances of the Buddha recollecting his awakening, and he recollects it in terms of his understanding of dependent origination, how critical that was. Understanding the dependent co-arising of phenomena and awakening that arose because of that understanding. And of course the discourse of where the Buddha contemplates the contemplating the Four Noble Truths as a basis for his awakening. Also the Buddha contemplating the limitation or the danger in sense experience, in feeling, and in sort of thoughts, emotions that are stimulated from that. And then recollecting, say, the benefit, the the benefit, the boon to it, and that because there's there are drawbacks, which we have to understand, but then there's also the fruits that arise when we of goodness, of when we experience things through the senses, the feelings that we experience, the thoughts and emotion that comes. So how do we step away from the things that are drawbacks and draw close to the benefits and to be able to elicit that rather than to be being just subject to some random manifestation of these things. And then understanding, say, the way out, understanding the escape, which the Buddha always casts in terms of that relinquishing of attachment, relinquishing of clinging. And so in this particular discourse, his description, he says, yeah, this will serve for striving, and then it jumps to, then I attain Nibbana. And so I didn't get much of the details there. It comes up, this conviction and understanding, my deliverance is unshakable. This is my last birth. There's no renewal of being. But then he starts contemplating, wow, this, what I've attained to is really subtle, it's profound, it's hard to see, hard to understand. It's peaceful, it's sublime. And I don't think anybody's going to understand this. If I try to teach it, I'm just going to get tired. And then that's where the story of, say, a Brahma god knowing that thought in the Buddha's mind and then saying, the world would be lost, the world would perish. So then he manifests before the Buddha Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One teach the Dhamma, let the Sublime One teach the Dhamma. There are beings with little dust in their eyes who are wasting through not hearing the Dhamma. There will be those who will understand the Dhamma. And that's actually the request for Dhamma talks is that's that chant. And so it's that verse from the Brahma Jaloka Dipati Sampati, and sort of it's that same verse that is sort of repeated, and that's that one evoking, recollecting the request to the Buddha, and so that there is that request to out of compassion to teach the Dhamma, and and then the Buddha, thinking about it again, reflecting on it again, and sort of realizing, yes, there are people who will understand. Yes, there are people with little dust in their eyes, and so then he determines to teach. So that